Canada's already, there's been a huge change in the tech growth there, which is great. And we've had so many success stories of with Lightspeed and Shopify, and then a whole other group of private companies like Wealthsimple who are following suit, which is great. And we need more. And so if you're, again, if you're an entrepreneur who's Canadian, find the problem and solve it, and you can absolutely be based in Canada, do it and build a global company from there. And I think that's wonderful. And as you said, there's a lot of problems to be solved. And so if you love this idea of pro-human tech, because again, I love a world that sounds more human, like that sounds good to me, go create that.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rana Sarkar, and you're listening to Confluence. Each week, we dive deep into the issue shaping tech, diplomacy, and the economic recovery in disruptive times through the lens of Silicon Valley, Canada, and the world. This week, we're coming home to Canada and hearing about two Canadian success stories. We'll be back with Cloudflare's Michelle Zatlin and introduce Shopify's Atlee Clark. Both women are shining examples of Canadian talent and work ethic. We'll explore what makes Canadian talent and tech so unique, that special Canadian sauce that has proven key to building a forward-thinking and industry-leading business ecosystem. First, we talk to Michelle, co-founder and COO of Cloudflare, who you met in our last episode on Canada's role in Silicon Valley. She explains her journey, how she went from growing up in small-town Saskatchewan to becoming a global tech leader.
I mean, I grew up with a happy family in Canada. I went to public school. I'm from a small city in Saskatchewan, Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, and I played sports and I played the piano and did all those after school programming. And, you know, I was an eager student. I got good grades. And when I was in high school, I really wanted to be a doctor. I loved science. I loved that there was always an explanation. Science explained a lot of things. And I really wanted to be a doctor because I also wanted to pair these, there was always a reason in science with helping others. And so when I was in high school, I wanted to go be a doctor. I went to McGill. I studied chemistry there with that kind of sight on my horizon. And it was 3 years into McGill or the second year into McGill, I did my summer internship and I did a research project for some physicians at the hospital system in the Montreal General and the different hospitals in Montreal. And this research project went really, really well. And it won all these awards. And I was an undergrad student and I won awards as a graduate student PhD sort of category. And it was a big deal. And I just remember not liking it that much. And I thought I wanted to be a doctor. And I was so excited. I had this amazing summer opportunity and I just didn't enjoy it. And I thought I just did something that like won awards and I wasn't enjoying it. And so I called up my parents and literally out of nowhere said, "Mom, Dad, I'm not sure I want to be a doctor." And you can imagine they were like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I'm going to minor in business." And they're like, "What?" I was the only chemistry student to toggle between a lab coat and the management building, the Hoffman management building at McGill. And I, you know, minored in McGill, it's called management. And I just really wanted to go gain some more experiences after. And I said, I'm going to work for a couple of years before I go to med school. And well, I never went to med school. And I fell in love with tech, where you get to help people in a different sort of way.
It's not just anyone who can take an idea or a hobby and turn it into a multi-billion dollar company critical to the world's digital infrastructure.
You know, what happened was I was at business school and, you know, say what you want about business school, but you meet really smart people from all different backgrounds. And so this is my first time living in the US. I'd lived in Canada the whole time and I found myself at Harvard Business School on the campus. And you're just exposed to all these incredibly intelligent people, motivated people from lots of different backgrounds and very, very, very global. And so my eyes, my horizons were expanded immediately. And Matthew Prince was my classmate. You kind of have a classmate of 90 students. And so he was one of 90 that we are a part of this bigger group of 900. But the 90 of you really get to know each other very well. And he'd been an entrepreneur. He was very technical. He'd started a couple things. And he always talks about this project called Project Honeypot, like all the time. And I didn't even know what it was, but he just always talked about it. And so finally, like a year and a half later, Rana, so it's a long time later, we're on this school trip down in Silicon Valley, you know, we're on a school trip just learning about entrepreneurship. And I literally say to him, "Okay, what, you always talk about Project Honeypot, what is it?" And he's like, "It's a open source community that tracks web spammers online." And I was like, "And how many people have signed up for this thing?" He's like, 80,000 kind of IT administrators. He called them webmasters. That was back in 2009. He's like, 80,000 webmasters. And I said, 80,000, that's a lot. Like, how do they hear about you? because they had no budget, like no money. And I said, and how do they hear about you? He's like, well, they talk about us online and they sign up for it. I'm like, and what do they get? He's like, well, they put honeypots on their websites and the honeypots track malicious behavior. The data goes back to the central source, to Project Honeypot. And I was like, what do you do with that data? He's like, well, we work with law enforcement agencies around the world to go find the spammers and get them all like offline. I was like, doesn't that take a long time? He's like, yes, years. And I literally said to him, I don't understand why anyone in their right mind signs up for this thing. And he said to me, because Michelle, one day these users want us to actually create a service that stops the problem. And I was like, huh. And then like a light bulb went off and it was like, wow, interesting. Maybe there is something here. Maybe there is a problem that needs to be solved for a huge segment of customers that no one has good solutions for. And that was the aha moment. And so like a good business school student, we sent out a survey to Project Honeypot users. We sent a survey out to 500 IT administrators or small business owners. Think about them as small business owners, 500 of them who are part of this community, who had elected in. They obviously cared about security because they were already part of this community. And I asked questions, and I was not an expert on the subject matter, but I asked questions like, okay, how much do you care about website security? What, you know, and we had grading and you need to rank it, but we also had open form questions. And so the first half of the survey was about the problem, the second half about the solutions they use. And Rana, the results of that survey were like the huge aha of kind of like, wow, there was a real problem here. The survey results, first of all, I sent it to 500 people. We got, you know, 150 responses. So clue one, high response rate. I mean, didn't offer anybody any money or any gift cards. It was just out of the goodness of your own time, will you tell me about this problem? High response rate. So clearly there's some need. You read through the answers on the problem side, huge problem, big pain point. And in the freeform like field, it was the responses said things like, web spammers are criminals. They're the criminals of the internet. They belong in jail. There was one person who's like, web spammers make me believe in the death penalty. Like it was just such a visceral, you don't need to know anything about website security. You think, oh my goodness, clearly there's a problem. So then the second part of the survey was what solutions were they using? And every single person had a Band-Aid solution. And so this became the opportunity for us of saying, oh wow, okay, clearly there's a problem. Could we come up with a solution? Can we use technology to solve this problem? And that was the next aha. So we looked around and we thought about, should we build hardware boxes? Because back in 2009, the cloud was not a thing. It was not a thing. So we started with, should we be building hardware boxes? But the idea of, could we ship a hardware box to a small business owner? Like they were probably hosting on GoDaddy. Like that's not going to make any sense. And then we were like, well, should we be a software solution? But we're like, well, maintaining that will be a huge headache. And we were really inspired by what David Yulevich was doing at OpenDNS, where he was doing something on consumer side or the user side for delivering security through DNS. And we thought, instead of using the consumer side, could we do it for the businesses? And it became very clear. That was when the aha happened. It was like, wow, we could build a global network that speeds up internet traffic and at the same time provide protection for whether you're a small business, a nonprofit, an entrepreneur trying to build the next thing, a student with a hobby project, or a Fortune 1000. And that's what we've built.
Cloudflare isn't the only growing company with roots in Canada. Shopify is Canada's greatest tech success story to date and its most valuable company, now worth over $190 billion. The e-commerce solutions company has become a global leader and a direct competitor to Amazon. They've used innovative methods to empower the little guy, to make e-commerce more accessible and more widely integrated than ever before. Atlee Clark joined Shopify in 2014 and is now the director of operations. But before coming back to work in Ottawa for the company, Atlee's career trajectory, which began in policy, took her to the United States.
In undergrad, I did a degree in politics and focused actually on the Canada-US defense relationship. And I had this theory at the time that you couldn't be an expert on another country unless you'd lived in it. But I felt that in Canada, we were sort of armchair experts on the United States. And so I decided that if I was going to pursue understanding this relationship between our two countries, I needed to live there. And I purposely picked a master's program that was very not focused on getting international students. I went to the George Washington University's School of Public Policy, and it's a great school, but it's like very focused on churning out senior leaders for the government. And it was an amazing immersive experience. I learned a lot about American culture and ways to operate. But somewhere in the middle of all that, I said, you know what, I find this intellectually stimulating, but this is not what I want to do for my career. I had a fancy little thing called an OPT, which you get when you go to school in the US. It means you can work for a year. So I left DC and I said, if you're going to do a 180 on your career, can you do it? And in 2009, it was San Francisco. So I moved there and stayed for 10 years.
Experience in Silicon Valley can be crucial, but Atlee also understood that special something about the Canadian community that sets it apart. In fact, she was the founding executive director of the C100, an executive leadership community of Canadian founders in the Bay Area. You might remember, we recently spoke to C100 leaders Laura Bueller and Chris Albinson in episode 5.
What drew you to the C100? And tell us about the arc of getting involved with starting up the C100 back when in its earliest days.
Yeah, that's a great Canadian story because it actually involves a Mountie and a moose on Canada Day. So I know, right? You didn't even know this was coming. Yeah, right?
That is too much. That's too much Canadian almost, right?
I know. So the Digital Moose, which is a great organization that exists in the Bay Area, they held a Canada Day event on the peninsula every year. And I had just arrived. I knew no one in San Francisco. Like not a soul. So I was like, okay, we're going to go to this Canada Day event, see who I can meet. And I had my niece who lives in the Bay Area with me. She was about 5. And they had that moose. They have a moose, right? It's like a giant moose and they take it around all the place, all the events. It's great. All these kids were climbing on it. And she said she wanted to go on it. So I took her over. There's this guy standing there in a Mountie outfit. To be clear, his name is Michael Worry and he is not a Mountie. But he did have a Mountie jacket. And I was trying to get her up on the moose and he sort of helped me. And we started talking and I explained to him what I was doing. And he said, oh, you really got to talk to Chris Albinson and Anthony Lee. They've just started this thing called the C100 and they're looking for some help. Like maybe you can help them. And I was like, great. When can I meet them? And I went and met them. And in true, I think, Silicon Valley venture capital way, I started presenting myself as someone who has this background in politics. I had done government relations for a long time. And they're like, okay. And I basically just said to them, listen, I have 5 months left on a working visa. If you don't like me, you don't even have to fire me. I will be deported. And they were like, deal. You got the job. And so I joined them, like it was very early days and we just they had brought some money together, some people together, and it was my job just to start making all the things that they had said real. And that's what we did for the next 4.5 years.
It was during her time at the C100 that Atlee first saw the rise of a little company called Shopify.
It's interesting because the first event I ever did is in my role in C100, I joined in November. We held this event in January and we brought down 4 rising stars in Canadian technology. And one of them was Toby Luque, who is the founder of Shopify. And Shopify was about 20 people. They were raising their Series A. And he was honestly like one of the first Canadian entrepreneurs that I really got to meet. And over the next, you know, 4 and a bit years that I was with C100, I really got to see him build that company within my context of learning all the time. And so when I decided it was time for C100 to be in somebody else's capable hands, it was a no-brainer that like Shopify and Toby were the place I wanted to be.
It's not always easy in Silicon Valley. Atlee had seen firsthand how difficult it could be for Canadian startups to break into this competitive industry.
Yeah, so when I first started, there's actually a lot of barriers to startups getting funding from the Silicon Valley and from the US generally. Those included like actual policy restrictions and tax implications that were making that difficult. But we were also suffering a bit of a reputation issue. And we decided to tackle both of those. So the team went and worked really closely with government to get Section 116 passed to unlock U.S. venture capital for Canadian startups. And then two, it was about really starting to talk about Canadian startups. There was, when I started, there was like this rumor going around that like it takes 7 years for a company to fail in Canada. And if you've been in San Francisco for like 4 days, you know that that's way too long. Like you fail fast. And there was this perception that there was like all this government money that was propping all these companies up that didn't have the like what it took and weren't being pushed to do that. And so we really started trying to collect the success stories that existed in Canada already and then bolster those success stories with connections to either capital or executives inside bigger tech companies to get them to the next level and to start those stories being spread throughout the valley. And those early days were really interesting because there was venture capitalists who were like, I will never invest in a Canadian company. They have to move here. And we were really like, listen, they can, and there's great ways to do that, and you're missing the boat. So we played the FOMO game for a long time.
Following her own advice, Atlee moved back to Canada. And when she got back, she was surprised and energized by the velocity of the tech scene growing back home.
It was time to come back to headquarters from a professional standpoint. We have been growing rapidly is like such an, like a, the wrong
yeah,
word.
It's
like, yeah. It is an understatement, yeah. So, but this is about, you know, 2.5 years ago, and the company asked me, we need you, but we need you here. You know, it was an interesting decision for me because I love the Bay Area. Listen, do I miss it? Yes, 100%. But I also deeply love where I'm at. And I think those two things can be true at the same time. And I realized that how much I believe in this company and our mission and what we're doing, and that I could contribute in a next level kind of way if I came back. I also realized after spending 10 years in the Bay Area that the magic of the Bay Area, the connections, right? Like everybody's connected to everybody. Your currency is your network. And more importantly, actually, your currency is like your ability to bring good people together. And I realized that that wasn't going to go away. I could still leverage that wherever I was from, because I should take my own advice. Like entrepreneurs used to ask me all the time, do I have to move to San Francisco? Like I love living in Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, St. John's, whatever. And I'm like, no, all you got to do is get on a plane every 6 weeks, go to a couple parties, and people will think that you live here. And they're like, okay. And that's not true right now, but I think it's like the same mentality. Like you either you can participate in this community. It's very open by its nature because it's like built on the internet, which by its nature is open. It's just how you show up in it.
Tell us a little bit more about like when you arrived in Canada. What did you walk into and how is it, you know, both either met or not met your expectations on return?
What's interesting is I've never lived in Ottawa. I've spent a lot of time here because I've been with Shopify for 6.5 years at this point. So I was coming back here often, but I've never lived here. So coming here was like a whole new thing. I think that one thing that I saw even just from visiting, and now I can say this with authority because I've lived here for a little while, is that I think Ottawa specifically has changed a lot. I think Ottawa has a reputation of being old and boring. A lot of people who, no offense, work for the government. It's like very slow and like, you know, that kind of thing, right? And what I've seen in Ottawa is that there's energy here now in everything, including the lawyers and the people who work for government. Like there is an energy here that I don't think was even here like 7 years ago, that you can just see in everything from the restaurants that have opened up, cultural things that are going on. I think Shopify played a big role in like attracting a lot of people to Ottawa. The other thing is I've now spent a lot of time in Toronto, and Toronto is, if you're thinking about startups and tech, it's like, it is the place. It's where the investors are. It's where the exciting companies are, like the ones you haven't heard of yet. There's exciting companies across the country, but like, if I was a betting person, I would put my money on the next big thing coming under Trump.
So what exactly is it in Canada that's leading this explosive growth for both product and talent? Michelle shared her thoughts.
As someone who has lived in Canada, proudly Canadian, and you know, I grew up in the prairies. I went to McGill, I lived in Toronto. My husband's Canadian and our families are there. Like, so we have lots of experience in Canada. And then now I've been living in the US for about 10 years. So I guess I kind of have that perspective as well is, you know, there's so many cultural things that are similar, but there were a couple of things that were really big differences when I first moved here. And now I've been here for 10 years, you kind of get used to it. And I remember the two things that really stuck out to me when I got to the US is how much more competitive it is here. It is just, and again, this was part of a, like, okay, you thought you were good, but you got to step up your game to even compete here. And so it was really competitive. And so, okay, here we go. And I just was really, people were playing to win. And you kind of decide, you had to decide, were you playing to win or not? Like it felt different. So I would say that was something that felt different. And the second thing that really stuck out to me is how much people like to talk about themselves and self-promote themselves. And I mean, I can tell you in Saskatchewan, that is considered rude. Like that is the opposite of what you do in for sure in Saskatchewan. I don't want to speak for all of Canada because it's all about the community. And again, I'm not an expert and there are definitely historians that can get you all the thing. But as I think back and as I've been more connected to the ecosystem of what's going on, you know, both the tech ecosystem and entrepreneurship back in Canada through the C100, through the work of the Consulate General, or even just going back to Canada is like, especially in somewhere like Saskatchewan where, like the winters are harsh. And so you got to stick together. Community matters, perseverance matters, and you watch out for each other. You watch out for your neighbors. I think that it's a huge country and its population is growing, but it's a fraction of the population compared to something like the United States. And so you watch out for each other and that community and, you know, we're in this together. It is different. That spirit is different in the North than it is here in the US that I've experienced. And of course you find your community and, you know, now we have neighbors that watch out for us. Like you find that. But when I first came, there was a lot of what have I done recently? And I just was like, it took me a long time to even talk about what I have done because it was all about we or what we're doing. And a lot of people said, no, Michelle, people want, what have you done? And I'm just like, this is so rude. So I've gotten better to find ways to live up to that here without losing who I am. But there's something in there, I think, Rana, about the community working together.
Atlee points out that these successes could also come from taking a different business approach.
So I'll start with whether it's bottom up or top down. I think it's less that and more about the nature of growth in the Valley. So being in the Bay Area, like the collisions, the networks, like everybody's got an idea, right? And that is such a wonderful thing, but it's also extremely noisy. You can never tell what's real and what's not. And I think that Shopify did a very good job of building the thing as opposed to talking about the thing. I'm not entirely convinced that that's inherently Canadian. I think it's actually because our founder is an engineer and he would rather be in the code and building something than necessarily going on the stage at TechCrunch and talking about how cool his investors are. And so I think that mentality of like heads down enabled us to build Shopify. And I also think it enabled us to have the people focused too on that for as long as we could. I think that what's important to us is that merchants, that entrepreneurs understand what Shopify is more than we necessarily care anybody knows what Shopify is. I think what's changing is that more people are aware of entrepreneurship generally, right? And the awareness of that means that more people are becoming aware of Shopify. So what I'm trying to circle here is like, it's not from like a business case perspective. It's important that Amazon tells you what you can get at Amazon from a buyer perspective, because people who make the purchase of the consumers are the most important thing for their platform. We've taken a different approach and we're saying, actually, we think it's the entrepreneurs, the brand owners who are the most important, and we'll stand behind them and build the things for them so that they can go out into the world and say, this is what I'm building, this is what I'm selling, these are my ideas. And we believe that in the power of like the many versus the few. And I think Amazon takes the, you know, it's the everything store, definitely takes the few version. And we just are approaching it in a really different way. And we think it's the better way.
The trick is keeping those values, even while scaling.
What we saw during the pandemic, what we had anticipated from the growth of online shopping for the next 5 years happened in a period of 6 months. All of our projections got thrown in the garbage because we believed this future was coming, but we thought we had more time. Everybody thought they had more time. And as a company, we stopped and said, what can we do right now? We had a week where everyone just worked on things to address the problem that small businesses were having. We took teams off other projects and said, you need to build local delivery right now. And they did in a week. It was nuts. And I'm less worried about the future because for us, what we worry about is small businesses, entrepreneurship, et cetera. It's we were able to pivot to serve what they needed and keep them alive. Now, the reality is we see in the, all the data that's saying that, a lot of people lost their jobs. Women were disproportionately affected. People of color were even more disproportionately affected. And what are the downstream effects of that? I think personally, I'm worried about because I don't think we're seeing those effects. I think from a Shopify perspective, we want to address that by putting tools in people's hands to if they want to build something, then we want to help them do that. Whether that can be true and whether that reality that what will happen because of this speed up, I don't think we're going to be able to tell what actually just happened for many years. And so for Shopify, it's just continuing to the mission of you want to start something, we will help you start it. And I hope people go back to buying in store and doing those things because I think that's good for communities. And we have solutions for that too. But I also think that we have painted a picture of what commerce can be. And it's really interesting. And the whole world has caught up. Everybody knows how to buy things online now. You know, my grandma's ordering stuff all the time. She loves when she figures out that she bought it from a Shopify store, sends us an email. So I think a lot has changed, but it's going to take some hindsight in a couple of years to really see what happened.
Casting your eye forward, do you think that you'll still be able to, maintain the ethos and the culture of doing that in, in a context where there are more eyes on you and you're in the line of sight now for so many of the largest businesses in the world because the competition is just getting even fiercer now. How is the internal culture reacting to that?
Yeah, so it's a great question because, as I said, that gap sped up online retail. It also sped up who we are. Right? And what role we play in the tech landscape. And we have been heads down. We have been able to shield ourselves from a lot of things for a long time. And that's over. And I think it's actually a really good thing for us internally. It sort of galvanized us, that idea. We believe that it's better to have more voices rather than few, to have the Shopify version of online shopping versus the Amazon version of shopping. That is the we can get up and say, we believe that's the right thing. That's the thing that should be in the world. And that there should be more entrepreneurs and there should be easier ways to bring your ideas and your products to the world. And for you to own your destiny in that way, right? Owning a business is an extremely empowering thing. And I think the eyes that are on us just make us want to bring that reality even more. And we internally, we try not to get distracted by competition. It's not about, we don't talk about Amazon every day, but it's saying like we're in the big leagues now and we're here to play and we're here to win. It's actually really an exciting time to be inside Shopify.
Michelle also touched on the important values of equity and inclusion.
You are one of the three women you know, on the planet who has co-founded a startup that has gone to greater than $2 billion in market cap. And that number, you know, is just so singular that, you know, describe the journey, you know, and describe that sense that when you were in 2009 as somebody who was co-founding a business, the kind of discrimination maybe you would have seen implicitly or even explicitly, you know, as, you know, somebody who just didn't fit the mold in of starting a business, the aspirations that you did. And how do you think that, you know, particularly in terms of gender here in the Valley, but also in tech, has evolved in this last decade? Because that conversation has certainly come a long way. Whether the practice has, that's another question, but the conversation has started to move. And you were, you know, right there from the beginning of that to this moment right now.
I guess I have a lot to say and points of view on a lot of things that you just asked about. So a couple things. So, I mean, I hope people are listening to this, and I hope people see me and they think, wow, if Michelle can do it, so can I. Like, I think back to, I had that aha moment seeing other entrepreneurs. I'm just like, if that person could be an entrepreneur, so could I. Like, and it was just, and I hope people are listening to this podcast and that's actually one of the reasons why I agree to do these sorts of things. I want this idea of entrepreneurship or building something that you're passionate about to be demystified and to know that it's not this mystical thing. It's if you have a problem that you can solve for potential customers and then go build it and get the team together to do it, you can do this. Like, you really can. You just got to find the problem that you're passionate enough to solve. It's got to go find a good problem to solve. And what's that? So that's my first piece. You know, the data, I have such mixed feelings on it because the data's not good. It's not good. It's not good. There are more men than women. There are way more men than women founders. There are not enough women who have taken their companies public. Like, there's just the data is not very encouraging. But on the other hand, I kind of think back to when I started Cloudflare, I almost like ignored it. I mean, I read all that data about companies failed and 95% of companies failed. And I was like, okay, well, that means 5% have to be successful. I'm going to be the 5%. Like, you know, it wasn't 100% of companies failed. I'm like, a couple are successful. Why can't that? If someone else was in that, I might as well be in that bucket, I guess is my point. Or I remember there was an HBS professor. He had a Founders Dynamics book. And it just was like, basically, I read the book and I remember it was Matthew and I just, and Lee were just getting started. And I remember I lived in a studio apartment down in Soma and I was reading the book and like literally threw it off the edge of my bed because I just was like, I'm not going to be one of these stats. I refuse to be one of the stats in these books of the founders blowing up with each other. I just was like, I'm not going to be that. And so I'm going to try my best not to be that is what I would say. So the data is not that encouraging, but there are success stories. So it could be you and it should be you and go make it happen. Go try your best. And I think that there are hopefully judgment that'll work out well. So I that's the other piece of it. I hope people go for it. We need more women starting companies. We need more women investing in companies. We need more women in this industry. This industry is not going away. Technology is becoming more important, not less important. It is a huge growth area. There is so many problems to be solved. We need diverse points of views. We need diverse teams to be able to drive better business results, be a better place to work. And there's a huge economic upside personally for you. So it's just like, come into the industry and help change the numbers.
There have been a lot of conversations about Canada's brain drain versus brain gain. Atlee offered a few strategies to get more Canadian talent seen, heard, and involved.
Really interesting. Again, COVID, there's a lot of bad things about COVID, but it's also brought some really interesting new dynamics into the way we live and the way we work. So Shopify decided fairly early that we now will not have offices. We will be remote forever. And that means a whole host of things from the way that we work, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the biggest benefits of that has been access to global talent. And I think that that's just an indicator how a lot of companies are just going to start operating. Like, default to global, get who you want, and they can live anywhere. And so I think what you're going to see is that people choose to live the places that they want to from a lifestyle perspective, from a political environment perspective, where they want their kids to go to high school, et cetera. And I think for a lot of people, Canadians and others, Canada is an extremely appealing place to be. And I think that it will also mean a lot of Canadians are like, cool, I'm going to go live in Paris for the foreseeable future. And I think that's a wonderful thing too. Like, we're going to be able to both bring people in and allow people to go out. And I really believe, like, I don't believe in brain drain. I believe in brain flow, and that you're a Canadian wherever you are. And that when you go out into the world and you come back to Canada, you bring something with you that's valuable. And so I'm just excited for just like Canada to be more places and more people to be in Canada. And I think that the changes in the way that we work will enable that to happen. And I think there's going to be so many benefits from that.
What advice would you have for government right now, just from the perspective that you have?
I think it's about this flow. So I worked at, I had an internship at the Canadian Embassy very long time ago in Washington, D.C. And I remember we had a wall and it had all these like by district stats on them, right? And whenever anybody was going to Capitol Hill, they'd go by the wall and they'd be like, okay, I'm going to see Representative so-and-so, take that page off the wall, which is kind of funny now that we take paper like that, but whatever. And I think that was a really effective because at the end of the day, they just wanted to know what Canada could do for them. And it was like a nice reminder, like, hey, like the Canadian economy contributes X to your economy and we trade these things and et cetera, et cetera. And I think now what we have to do is a version of that that demonstrates how we flow in their flow. And when I think about some of the ways that we have gone out and talked about Canadian technology specifically, we have a tendency to just say, Canada's great too. And I always thought that was just like, just didn't go far enough. Like, it's about talking, not necessarily just talking about what Canada does great, but how it's contributing to the world. We talk a lot about Canadian talent and like, you should come and recruit at Canadian universities, or you should think about putting a sales office in Toronto or whatever. And it's like, how about we just sit down on the same side of the table and say, okay, like we're all building on the internet. How are we going to do that better? Like, this is what Canada brings to the table. Let's talk about how we build this together. We flag wave a little too much and expect that people just say, that's so cool. And then that's it. It's like, no, like, how are we going to work together? How do we do this? And the reality is that business leaders are spending time doing that, right? Like Toby spending time with every CEO, you know, right? That's in the Bay Area. So he's doing that already. And he's going to talk about product and how we build together and how we partner, et cetera, not just showing up and being like, you know what's awesome? Shopify. And so I think like there's a finesse in the communication that I think would help us position ourselves better and more as partners as opposed to boosters.
As we learned, it's not easy to build a Shopify or a Cloudflare from the ground up. But that said, there's something special about Canada and the Canadian business ecosystem that points to a bright future. Diversity, inclusion, intention, and a supportive infrastructure all contribute to the kind of electric environment where catalytic change can happen.
Last question, and maybe this is just the aspiration question about Canada and, you know, the ecosystem that we're evolving there and the Valley in the next 5 years. Like, you have seen and you've been part of the arc in this last decade here. And, you know, you're pointing to a catalytic moment that we're in the midst of right now and huge opportunities. Governance is the new superpower, as you once said. This is clearly a thing that's happening right now. But where are we in 5 years' time in your aspirations? How do we develop a more pro-human
internet? How do we, you know, encourage more people to become entrepreneurs? How do we grow our ecosystems between Canada and Nouvelle?
So I'm a glass half full person. So I'm optimistic. I think all of those things are absolutely, well, first of all, they are happening. Like they're happening, and there's good, and we have a chance for even more of it to happen. So I think that's my North Star, my one liner is that, like, I think those things are happening, and that's good. I think that there's so much opportunity. What's really interesting at what's happened last year is there's been a huge flattening out of where people are living and where people are, where you choose to, you know, potentially start your company. And I actually think that's a big opportunity for Canada, right? Canada's already, there's been a huge change in the tech growth there, which is great. And we've had so many success stories with Lightspeed and Shopify, and then a whole other group of private companies like Wealthsimple who are following suit, which is great. And we need more. And so if you're an entrepreneur who's Canadian, find the problem and solve it. And you can absolutely be based in Canada, do it and build a global company from there. And I think that's wonderful. And as you said, there's a lot of problems to be solved. And so if you love this idea of pro-human tech, because again, I love a world that sounds more human, right? Like that sounds good to me. Go create that, like, and what that means. So maybe that means you're going to create a new community that, you know, one of the things is, hey, it's going to be a kinder, gentler community, a more welcoming community. Honestly, I hope you build that. And I hope you have a smashing success, right? Like, because that would be great, because there's people who want to vote with their time and their wallets and how they do that, but someone's got to create it. You know, I'm talking about some of this content moderation and the trickiness there. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so passionate about that. I totally could help solve that problem. Please go solve it. Cause there's all these platforms who don't know how to deal with it. And they probably don't have the engineering resources in-house to deal with it. And they're like, that to me sounds like an opportunity. Like, go build it and then go try and sell it and get customers. And again, back to find a problem that you're really excited about. I was talking to someone yesterday who was really worried about deep fakes. And I was like, well, maybe there's an opportunity there. He's like, I'm going to go look into that. And I just think that there's a lot of shifts happening right now. And when there are things that are shifting, that creates entrepreneurial opportunity. And so why wait for somebody else to do it? You can do it. And I think the Canadian education system is amazing. The Canadians around the world want to help and give back in other ways. I think that there's a lot more money that you can raise now as a Canadian entrepreneur. That problem has mostly been solved. It was a big problem 15 years ago. It's not now because of some good regulation changes. And so be the person who creates it and build the next big thing, which I'm very optimistic for the future.
Thank you for listening to Confluence. We hope you're able to walk away from today's episode with some new perspectives. My takeaways from today include: the global tech ecosystem is no longer defined by geography. As tech continues to decentralize around the world, Canada has an opportunity to grow as a major tech player. Expect to see even more brain flow across borders as talent circulates between tech hubs in Canada, the US, and around the world, which will all accelerate through the recovery from COVID-19. It's clear that Canadians have a different approach, often bringing a broader, more diverse perspective that's rooted in a strong focus on community. As we continue to recruit, and more importantly, retain talent at scale, maintaining a commitment to diversity is of the utmost importance. If you want to learn more about the Canadian tech landscape and the relationship between government and the private sector, we've included some resources in the show notes. Confluence is produced by the Consulate General of Canada in San Francisco in collaboration with Edit Audio. Special thanks to Michelle Zatlin and Atlee Clark for being my guests. Production thanks to Wade Wallerstein, Kate Walter, Yves Beaulieu, Augustus Clark, Steph Colburn, Sophie Shin, and Ali Sirwa. I'm Rana Sarkar. Thank you for listening, and until next time.